At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict, Bakhmut. We're told by reliable sources that Bakhmut has fallen to the Soviet-Russian aggressor. I mix these two because sometimes it's very difficult to tell what army is on the field. It conducts itself as the Soviet army, except one outfit called the Wagner Group, which is mercenaries. I turned to Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, and visiting professor at Dickinson College to help me sort out what Bakhmut represents. At one time, Prigozhin of the Wagner Group was boasting about how he was going to take Bakhmut. Now that Bakhmut has fallen, the puzzle is, what does it mean for Russia? What does it mean for the battlefield? And why did it fall now? Jeff, a very good evening to you. Bakhmut. It is a ruin to see from the video that I've watched and the overheads. It resembles, the remains of part of Stalingrad. Everybody was fighting from cellars. But now the Ukrainians have withdrawn. What is the significance of it to Ukraine and to Russia?
Well, good evening to you, John. Its significance really, I think, is part psychological, part political. Psychological, the decision to continue to reinforce Bakhmut by the Ukrainians was, an effort to maintain Ukrainian morale. And one of the slogans was Bakhmut holds, Bakhmut holds. And also to show, as they did in Mariupol, that a smaller Ukrainian force could thwart the ambitions of the Russian Federation. On the Russian side, it also had political importance as well, as the Russians sought a success. And they really wanted that success, I think, prior to Victory Day back on the 9th of May. But it's a Pyrrhic victory at best. And even the capture of it is still contested by Ukrainian officials. We know that Ukrainian forces are still operating, at least on the outskirts. And Prigozhin, who you mentioned, and the Wagner Group, who spearheaded a lot of the fighting in and around Bakhmut for the Russians, has said, oh, by the way, I'm going to pull my forces out of Bakhmut in a couple of days. Unclear to me whether that's a coordinated withdrawal with the Russian Federation or a desire to claim I won. And now if it's lost subsequently, that's a failure by the Russian army. But right now as well, it has to be suggested that it has no significant strategic value. And as I mentioned to you before, John, you know, an example of the prospect theory, the willingness of leaders to continue to pour more and more resources, particularly manpower, into what is a losing proposition, whether it was Alcibiades and the Peloponnesian War in Sicily, the French at Dien Bien Phu, the Germans at Verdun. All of those are the example of losing sight of sunk cost and continue to pour more and more manpower into what has less significance and is a losing proposition.
Perhaps it's coincidence, but then again, no sooner had Bakhmut fallen, very careful word here, to either the Wagner Group, which is a private army, or the Russian army, which is resembles the Soviet army in command control from the top. No sooner had that happened than we have news of an operation in Belgorod, of what looks Belgorod Oblast, Russia, which looks like a raid by Ukrainian forces. Do these events connect in any fashion, Jeff, that you can see?
They certainly could, John. This is the so-called Freedom of Russia Legion, or the Russian Volunteer Corps, identified as Russians who support the Ukrainians, though the Ukrainians have tried to say, while we acknowledge these groups, we're not necessarily directing them. They operate at least in some of a semi-independent fashion. And obviously, them conducting these particular operations around the same time the Russians were declaring at least success in Bakhmut dampens down the psychological impact the Russians would have. Secondly, of course, this could force the Russians to divert more and more forces to these areas. They're using artillery and aircraft in response. And these operations have now gone on, it appears, for a second day. And this is going to be important as the Ukrainians try to identify the location or locations they're going to conduct this counteroffensive along that 600-mile front. So if the Russians have to denude a particular area to reinforce the area around Belgorod, that may offer the Ukrainians some ability to be successful. There have been complaints, and I'm sure it'll be pursued, that some U.S. military equipment was used by these paramilitary groups. Looks like a handful, perhaps, of Humvees. But, you know, John, in addition to that, we've seen other paramilitary operations, partisan activities, blowing up of trains. And even today, there was an interesting report that three drone speedboats had attacked a Russian reconnaissance naval vessel in the Black Sea, albeit unsuccessfully.
Now we go to an event that is within these hours. The announcement from the Department of Defense, Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to host 12th Ukraine Defense Contact Group meeting, virtual meeting, but is going to bring together defense chiefs and chiefs of defense from 50 nations. Again, this is, perhaps it's coincidence, but Bakhmut is said to fall. There's a raid on Russia, and now the war chiefs are gathering together. Is there a connection here, Jeff?
I think there is a connection, John, to the upcoming counteroffensive by the Ukrainians. Well, I don't think the Ukrainians are going to brief, obviously, 50 different countries on specifics of their tactics. What they're going to want to talk about as a group is, can we maintain the pace and flow of weapons, particularly resupply of things like ammunition, as this offensive gets underway and as it perhaps, hopefully, is successful? You know, over the period of time of the last year, what we've seen is reports that European-based units can now have accelerated, I should say, deliveries of ammunition resupply in particular by 30% as compared to the start of this conflict through the Army's 21st Sustainment Theater Command. And they'll want to make sure they can do that as this conflict unfolds here shortly. Also, I think it'll be a topic of conversation to some degree by that contract group will be the longer term logistical requirements of the upcoming training and eventual deployment of U.S.-made F-16s to Ukraine, because that will require substantial logistical support in Ukraine, airfields, ammunition, fuel, spare parts, et cetera, and probably bring up the nagging question, which I think is still out there. Will the contract group and the countries they represent agree to the deployment of foreign military contractors on Ukrainian soil to maintain sophisticated pieces of equipment like the F-16?
On the 21st to the 22nd, Russia claims that it conquered Bakhmut. Wagner Group claims it conquered Bakhmut and the Ukrainians withdraw. On the 23rd and 24th, raids into Russia by said to be rogue elements of the Russian people. On the 25th, the announcement on the 24th, but on the 25th, a meeting of the war chiefs virtually. All of this followed the meeting of the G7 nations in Japan over the weekend, where there was unanimity about Russia and its ally China. Not only was Russia condemned for its aggression, but China was very clearly condemned for its alignment with Moscow. And Jeff, it looks like the G7 blessed it. The Bakhmut operation had sufficiently satisfied the conditions. What you've taught me before a battle, you satisfy the conditions by draining the enemy's resources. The raid on Russia diverts all eyes to what are they going to do next? And now the war chiefs come together. What's next, Jeff?
Well, this is it. I would say before, shaping operations, information operations, diplomatic operations, logistic operations, military operations on the ground. And I think the Ukrainians, I think in the last week, have been masterful on the diplomatic side. We saw Zelensky not only go to the G7, but prior to that, make this tour of all European capitals, meet with the principal prime ministers, the Chancellor Scholz, Prime Minister Macron, Prime Minister Sunak, the Pope. And then he goes and meets with the Arab League, a very substantial, important group of countries who have been kind of on the fence in this war on Ukraine, urging them to support Ukraine in this conflict. And then off to the G7, as you suggest, John, to get the blessing along the way, of course, all those major Western European countries and the United States announcing additional military equipment for the Ukraine. And one other important person at that G7 meeting, of course, was Prime Minister Modi from India, who also has been a very large country, but a fence sitter in terms of supporting Ukraine over Russia in this ongoing conflict. So this really has been a shaping operation diplomatically. But you're right again, John, in terms of the focal point in many ways, the G7 after Ukraine and the surprise arrival of Zelensky was China, 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 and oh, by the way, China. And it seems to me it was the economic part of the strategy the Biden administration has been creating to confront the growing threat by China. We've seen it on the defense side with a Washington declaration with Korea about putting U.S. nuclear submarines into Korean ports. Major announcement by the Japanese earlier this year on increased defense spending. Announcement by the Philippines that allows U.S. basing rights. Mr. Biden in March met with the AUKUS leaders, Prime Minister of both Australia and Britain, about nuclear submarines to Australia. And then a Quad meeting, which was, albeit abbreviated, and held in Tokyo. All those things, a regional security around the periphery of China, and now a coordination on the economic front at the G7 meeting to try to restrict the export of key items to China. But I think it's important also to note, John, that the language at the G7 softened to a degree. Mr. Biden talked about de-risking with respect economically to China and not decoupling. Chinese economy too large. European economies too concerned about trying to decouple from China. How the Chinese react to all that remains to be seen. They have not reacted well in the immediate aftermath, though we saw the new ambassador arrive in Washington from China talking about an improvement in relations, a potential thaw, meeting between the National Security Advisor of the United States and his counterpart in Vienna about a week ago, and some people talking that Janet Yellen and the Secretary of Commerce might make a trip to China soon, and that the Defense Secretary, Mr. Austin, might meet his counterpart in Singapore during the upcoming Shangri-La dialogue in an effort to, if you will, stop this deterioration of U.S.-Chinese relations.
One more detail. I did not hear from the G7. I read what I could of their statements afterwards. I did not hear in any way concession to Russia saying, let's try the peace route here. In fact, there was nothing about Russia diplomatically whatsoever. It can't be that they weren't all informed that we're on the eve of something violent. It can't be that. It can't be that they weren't all informed beforehand of the decisions made by the U.S. and its allies about major weapon systems. The cruise missiles from the U.K., the missiles from France, and now the F-16s, which we'll speak about momentarily. Everybody knew what was next, and nobody stepped forward to stop it. Not even France, Jeff. Now, this is difficult. It's the Sherlock Holmes challenge. The dog didn't bark. How do you interpret that, Jeff?
Well, I think interpret that is a desire for solidarity at this critical moment, because everybody knows this counteroffensive is about to begin. I think it's also consistent with this strategy of being somewhat confrontational to China, because the Chinese have announced this so-called peace offensive, have named a diplomat, former ambassador to Moscow, oh, by the way, who was also visiting European capitals, Moscow and Kyiv. But there's a large scale of skepticism about his efforts amongst people in Washington and those other European capitals. And oh, by the way, at the G7 meeting, there were a significant number of additional sanctions levied by those countries against Russia. So you're quite right, John. There was not a lot of discussion I saw in any way, shape, or form, not only by Macron, but even by Modi, who was present, in terms of trying to find a diplomatic solution. And that certainly didn't come out in the final communique.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor and CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. When we come back, the F-16, what does it mean for now and for the future? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.